Loving God, may the words of my mouth, may the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your eyes. And God, may I never lightly presume to preach your word. And may we never lightly presume to hear your word. For in your word is abundant life. So I start by first quickly apologizing to people who were at Ulterior Worship a week and change ago, because you heard an earlier version of this same sermon. I was working it out with you. To the rest of you, let's just cut right to the chase. The gospel, very clear, and read it beautifully. Poor man goes to heaven, rich man goes to hell. There you go, short sermon. Oh, and it's not good for us. Not good because we're rich. I mean, we might not be stable. Many of us might be vulnerable. We might have problems if our paycheck was a week late. But we're rich, and we're going to hell, if parables are anything to go by. So, you're welcome. Have a lovely day. Is it fair? No. Is this rich man a bad guy? I mean, he didn't recognize Lazarus at the gate, okay? And if he had, what difference would it have made? I mean, no matter how much money I give the guy with the bucket at my highway exit, he's going to be there the next day. You know it. I know it. He knows it. You ever hear of Brad Ross? Brad Ross played left wing for the Marlies, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. Now he plays for the Heilbronn Falcons in the Deutsche Eishockey Second Liga. So what do you think the chances are that Mitch Marner knows who he is? Do you imagine that he might ask Brad for a little advice on his wrist shot from time to time? Probably not. I mean, you know, when you get picked for the big leagues, you don't spend much time with minor league players because the minor leaguers didn't make the cut. So what do they have to offer? They become, I don't know, invisible, really. They become irrelevant because you're at this level and they're here. The guy with the bucket, Lazarus, not major league players. Sorry. You know it. I know it. If they were, they'd have jobs, major league contracts, they'd be wealthy. It was often said in the first century that if you were in need of spiritual advice and you came to a village in which there was no rabbi, the best course of action was to seek out the richest man in the village, because he obviously knew God's favor. He was blessed, and therefore he would have the best advice about getting connected with God. The rich man in the parable, he doesn't even have a name. All he is rich. Later on, we'll start calling him Dives, but that's just Latin for rich man, because that's all you need to know. He's rich. So, he's close to God. He's worth knowing. He's got it made. And it's so different now, except that it's not. You know, we're in the midst of political campaigns, all promising to help us get ahead, all promising that we can get more rich, because that's what we want. That's what's going to make us happy, getting more rich. There's a U.S. president who essentially ran on the idea that because he was rich, he would be a good president. My money proves that I'm better than the others. I should be in charge. Look, I'm rich. We say that Bill Gates is successful. I read articles. Bill Gates, successful. Why do we say that? Do we have any idea how he sleeps at night? Do we have any insight into his sense of satisfaction or joy? Does he feel at peace? I have no idea. But he's rich, and therefore he's successful. And just between us, and I'm sincere and I tell you this, I know a wise man. I mean, a wise man. But sometimes I don't trust the advice he gives me because he's poor. I mean, how wise could he be? And now, never mind the way that he embraces and rejoices in every sunset, every creature that crosses his path. Pay no attention to his patience with humanity and his real hope in the future. He has no money, so how wise can he be? success used to be a good thing. We worked hard at it. And now this parable, like, just wrecks it. Wrecks it for the rich. And that's most of us. Wrecks it for preachers like me, because I got nothing to say. I quote, "Beside all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so. No one can cross from there to us." Well, that wrecks it. There's a chasm. We can't change it. What's the point in preaching at all? So to sum up, being rich sends us to hell, puts us on the wrong side of a chasm that cannot be crossed, so it doesn't really matter what I say. So as long as this is going to be my last sermon then, just let me say this. Father Abraham seems to be doing okay in this afterlife. Right? He's on the good side of the chasm. But let me tell you, shocker now, there are pictures of him in purple, okay? The sign of wealth. Abraham was rich, really rich. In fact, popular legend had it that Abraham built a gigantic mansion with a banquet table that was never, ever empty. It overflowed with food 24/7. And he wore purple robes, just like Lazarus. So, what's up with that? Long as I'm still preaching, you notice that even in the afterlife, the rich man doesn't get it. Right? He talks to Father Abraham. He asks him to send Lazarus to dip his finger in water and cool him in his torment. And when that's not going to happen, he asks Abraham to send Lazarus to speak to his brothers and save them. How hard would it have been to, I don't know, ask Lazarus? He's standing right there. "Hey, Lazarus, I know I have been a terrible person. I know I don't deserve your mercy or your consideration, but could you find it in your heart to spare me a drop of water? Could you take a moment, text my brothers, you know, let them know my fate, warn them?" Never occurs to him. He speaks only to Father Abraham. After all, Lazarus isn't playing in the major leagues. He's got no purple robe. And by the way, what would the warning to his brothers be? Don't be rich? Abraham's rich. Pack plenty of water? Like, I'm not quite sure what you're supposed to... Maybe the warning might be something like, don't let money be the thing that defines you. Whatever you do, be more than the rich man. Be a man who hurts and who cares. Be the guy that tells knock-knock jokes to kids. Be more than your money. Be more than defending your power and your position. Don't let your money isolate you from the world. Don't put up walls to keep the world out. Don't live hidden behind a gate. Recognize that life, the world, the people around you, they're part of you. Don't fall into the foolishness of believing that money is a blessing from God or a sign of approval. It's just money. Maybe the warning might have been something like that. Except that Lazarus hasn't figured that out yet. He's still mystified. He really has no idea why he's in torment. I mean, he's still talking to Abraham. He's not addressing Lazarus. He's still talking rich man to rich man as if it's some kind of club, a club to which Lazarus does not belong. That chasm, you know, the one that really bugs me, should bug you. You've heard me say before that sin isn't so much a specific action that's included on a list somewhere. It's those things that you and I do that keep us separated from God, keep us distant from the intentional love of the holy. In the parable, this chasm, I think that's sin. It's what keeps us separated. And it does say that it can't be crossed. "Beside all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, so that those who might want to pass from here to you cannot do so. No one can cross from there to us." So, a sin that can't be forgiven? Who fixed this chasm? Then we hear a parable, we assume, well, God has. It's a great divide, and upon judgment, God sends you to one side or the other. You just hope that you get to go to the side that has plumbing. But I don't think that God has created this chasm at all. I think that this chasm has been created by the rich man. And I'm sure that this chasm existed long before his death. It's the divide that keeps the rich man separate from Lazarus. It's the divide that keeps many of us separated from each other. Theist, atheist, Republican, Democrat, Israel, Palestine, Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, rich, poor, settler, indigenous. There's this chasm that's created by arrogance and contempt and ignorance. And we create it from either side, a chasm that's almost impossible to overcome. Almost. I mentioned that mansion that Abraham had, according to legend. So it was a sign of great wealth. It had four great doors, one facing each of the cardinal directions. And those doors were always open, open to anyone who wished to enter. And the banquet table was always full, full for anyone who had come to eat, rich or poor, friend or stranger, right or left, in or out. And Abraham, according to the story, never believed himself a great host. He did not believe that he was hospitable. He did not even believe that he was rich. He believed that the abundance at his table was God's. And the hospitality was also God. He, Abraham, simply had the privilege and the responsibility to share it. I would suggest to you that Abraham overcame the chasm, not in death or life beyond death. He overcame the chasm in life here and now, as soon as he recognized that his wealth was not his alone. As soon as he recognized the face and the presence of God in every part of creation. As soon as he realized that money is only money and that it only leads to sin when it leads us to imagine that we're different, that we're better than others. When it strips us of our common humanity to the point of becoming our identity and taking away our very name, the rich man. No name. His only identity. For Abraham, wealth is only wealth when it's shared with community, the whole community. Otherwise, it's a path to sin, separation from God and community. Let me cut right to it. I just want to give you a different end to the parable. The rich man, in his torment, he cried out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue." But Abraham explained to him, "Between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed so that those who might pass from here to you cannot do so, and no one can cross from here to us." And the rich man, he looked into the chasm, and the chasm looked into him, and he sobbed, and he cried, and he wailed, and he cried out, "Lazarus, I have been a fool. Every day you came to me offering me the face of God. Every day you offered me a chance to do something of value with my life. Every day you invited me to share God's wealth, and I was too blind to see. And I am sorry." And before the words were out of his anguished mouth, the rich man felt the chasm close. He felt the heat abate, and he found himself at the table in Father Abraham's mansion with Lazarus, together sharing in the abundance of God's great bounty. And he realized how small his life and his God had been, and how great and vast they were both meant to be. And he was, for the first time perhaps, at peace. Now we just had to pick a name. I don't know what I want you to do in response to the sermon. Maybe watch German hockey, I'm not sure. Maybe rethink your attitude toward the other, whoever that may be. Maybe recognize that your wealth, that your gifts are only a blessing when you share them. For my part, I am going to try to imagine my God more vast and more varied, more likely to show up in unlikely faces. I'm going to imagine my own life more vast, impacted by and impacting more people than I'd ever imagined before. And maybe, just maybe, as my God and my life become larger, the chasm that I've created will become more narrow. It's only one way to find out. Thanks be to God. Let us pray. Loving God, we are remarkable engineers and builders. Help us build the things that matter. Let us not build chasms. Instead, let us build bridges. Let us not build walls. Instead, help us build understanding, that we might recognize your presence in the other and recognize your presence in ourselves. We ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.